On December 21st, 1975, at 1 minute past one, Capital Radio was closed by the Department of Post and Telegraphs. Since then, independent local radio has grown and reached all corners of Ireland and risen to a level of public acceptance which could hardly be conceived even 5 years ago. During this program, we'll be looking back over the past year of local broadcasting, mainly in the city, and try to determine what choice of listening we can expect in 12 months' time.
This is Capital Radio News.
To see exactly why and how there's been a growth in local radio here, we have to go back 11 years and look at the situation in Britain in 1967-68.
The British government became increasingly concerned by the growth in the number of radio stations off her coasts, and the threat of action against them grew almost daily by mid-year 1966. The government alleged that the pirates stole wavelengths and interfered with shipping. Legislation was only a matter of time, and dramatic events in June 1966, centered around the radio station Radio City in the Thames estuary, precipitated it. Rich Calvert, owner of Radio City, had been shot dead by the leader of a rival pirate group. Radio London and Radio Caroline, and the rivalry between them, were also involved in events around the station, which was boarded and occupied. These events became headline news. Alarm grew markedly in government circles, and the following month, the Postmaster General announced the introduction of the Marine Offences Bill, which would make it an offence for a British citizen to be connected in any way with the offshore broadcasters. By spring 1967, the pirates were in their death throes. The Fort-based stations had been successfully prosecuted, declared to be in territorial waters, and closed down.
Within 3 months of the Marine Offences Bill becoming law, the BBC established Radio 1 in an effort to pacify a listening public whose interest in commercial radio was aroused by the offshore pirates. The format of Radio 1 was on a top 40 basis and a steady output of commercial pop music. To quote a musical paper of the 7th of October 1967, exactly 1 week after the introduction of Radio 1, it says, Radio 1 hasn't taken over, where the pirates are forced to leave off, even with the help of the disc jockeys. The BBC, sounding very like the old BBC, gave us a pretty reliable range of solid pop to the old family favourites formula. It also became apparent over the coming weeks that Radio 1 was not satisfying the public demand for radio entertainment. And so the British government commissioned a report called the Annan Report to investigate the establishment of an independent broadcasting commission to issue licences and monitor local radio services. It wasn't until October 1973, however, before the contents of the Annan Report materialised in the form of Capital Radio London and LBC. Capital Radio London commenced on the 16th of October. A week previously, LBC was established primarily for news circulation purposes. Capital was the first of many stations which were to be established under the auspices and general umbrella of the Independent Broadcasting Authority, which laid down basic technical advertising and presentation standards for the stations. With the demise of the British pirates, many of which could be received in Ireland, particularly on the East Coast, several enterprising groups of young men started to build their own local radio stations, and operating mainly at weekends, they began what we now know as local radio here in Ireland.
The next Sunday, actually, I should say, I think I said Saturday, yeah. We'll have Ed McDowell on Saturday from 1 until 2:30, and in a few moments we'll be on VHF with the Ed McDowell programme. 98 megacycles, VHF, or thereabouts. And for the last time, if you want to write to us, you can do so at the following address: Johnny Malone, 59 Lansdowne Park, Ballsbridge, Dublin 4. That's Johnny Malone, 59 Lansdowne Park, Ballsbridge, Dublin 4. And please do not write the name of the station on the envelope. Now, once again, to those people.
Radio Empathy, the only station in its day to operate on medium wave and VHF simultaneously, Radio Empathy was closed on the 6th of April, 1974, at 10 minutes past 1. Around that time also, we had Radio Melinda, Radio AMO, Channel 70, and indeed we also had Radio Dublin, but not the same Radio Dublin as we know today.
Good sound from the Small Faces, and that was called Ichiku Park, going by the title year of 1967. You're listening to Radio Dublin on 253 meters in medium wave band with good sound for you, and I do hope you enjoyed the good sound this morning. Here's one from the Kinks. It's called All Day and All of the Night. Well, there you go. That is usually Saturday night and Sunday morning, so here we go with
Radio Dublin from the early 70s. In those days, the station lineup was completely different to what it is today, and in fact, Eamon Cook, who was to figure so prominently in the station in later years, had not even been heard of at the time. After the closure of Radio Empathy in 1974, the airwaves in Dublin City were to stay free until 1975. In fact, August 2nd, 1975, at 12 noon, when Capital Radio first came to the airwaves.
On the medium wave band, 220 meters, that's 1367 kilohertz. This is the returning sound of Capital Radio. Yes, Capital goes on, despite all. You're tuned to 220. Capital goes on. And my name is Ed McDowell. I'm here for the next half an hour or so. And there we start off with a little bit of a Miss Megan Palmer. Well, there you go. This evening I'll be bringing you, featuring some, as many as I can get in this evening, of my favourite tracks from 1975. Not the tracks of 1975, but the ones I've played throughout 1975. This is a sort of New Year's programme.
Unfortunately, Capital was closed on the 21st of December by the Department of Post and Telegraphs. In fact, the city had witnessed another raid a year previously on Radio Melinda, and that was to be one of the most severe until 1978. Between 1975 and 78, the city saw growth of the local radio scene, including Radio Dublin, who commenced broadcasting 2 weeks after Capital in August 1975. Although Radio Dublin were not raided, they remained on the air right through 1976, and indeed AOD Radio also was established in 1976. In fact, AOD Radio was established by ex-members of Radio Dublin due to a disagreement over station policy. This resulted in Eamon Cook remaining at Radio Dublin with Don Moore, Mark Story and several others starting off AOD. The two stations remained on the air right through 1977. And the situation remained the same in the city until March 1978, when we saw a further split with Radio Dublin, this time resulting in the establishment of Big D Radio.
Mr. Cook was away, in fact, for a full week. As everybody knows, he was away for a full week, and it happened on the Monday, which was the Sunday he went away. So therefore, I had no way of contacting Mr. Cook. I would have liked to contact him, but I'm sorry, I didn't have a telephone number. I didn't have the hotel he was staying in. He was, in fact, in Spain. A week's rest.
Have you any comment on the allegations of damage to sound and transmitting equipment at Radio Dublin?
Well, at approximately around about 10:10, I was in the armchair, half asleep, when a colleague of mine, a disc jockey of mine, came in and told me that there was smoke coming from the upstairs of which where the transmitter was. He told me that there was a lot of smoke coming from the room and that apparently something had gone wrong. This was the first I heard of anything about the transmitter.
The Radio Dublin Big D split caused widespread repercussions in both the broadcasting and indeed amongst their audiences. The repercussions of this are still being felt by the stations involved. Meanwhile, on April the 22nd, 1978, Capital Radio resumed broadcasts from studios at Bachelor's Walk. All went smoothly until June, when the first raid occurred. As Big D Radio had been raided by the department a week previously in one of the most vicious the city has seen, a raid was expected at Capital at the time, and no equipment was found during the raid. All went smoothly until October, when a further raid occurred, and again no equipment was found, but this time the post office were on tape.
What did you do that then?
Around the same time, the Director General of RTE, Mr. George Waters, denied that a popular demand existed for independent radio and claimed that a campaign for it came only from banking, media and other commercial interests. He said, "The only demands I know of are for local radio and for more radio programs of popular music. RTE is ready and willing to meet these demands," he declared. Mr. Waters, at another occasion, had stated that nobody involved with any of the pirate stations presently operating would ever be employed by RTE. It should be very interesting, therefore, to see precisely how Mr. Waters staffs his new RTE national network, which has been given the go-ahead by the Department of Posts and Telegraphs. Meanwhile, Dr. Noel Brown was stating in the Dial that it was quite clear that RTE are not answering the needs of the young people who listen to the pirate stations and they will be exploited. In those circumstances, Mr. Faulkner was asked whether it was an option that some community-type organisation would be allowed to establish a radio station. Mr. Faulkner was also asked by Justin Keating, is it reasonable to assume that the minister has not excluded the possibility of issuing licences to people other than to RTE? Mr. Faulkner's reply was, "I've not excluded anything, but that does not mean that I've come to any decision in the matter." Meanwhile, down the country, some of Mr. Faulkner's colleagues were saying something completely different.
"First of all, Mr. McAllister, I'd like to think, what do you think, personally, of the pirate stations that they're generally called?"
"Well, first of all, I was approached about a week ago by Mike Ladenovan and Miss O'Shea of Tralee, and they asked me about pirate stations, and indeed about the community radio station here in Tralee. And I asked them at that time to send me on some data about the matter, which they did. And I told them I would take the matter up with the Minister for Posts and Telegraphs, that is Padraig Faulkner, who was a personal friend of mine. And I will be having a chat with Padraig Faulkner next week about the problem. And indeed, I will be telling him about the good work you're doing here in Tralee with your Tralee station. And I will do everything in my power to discourage him from banning pirate radio stations.
And having read the data, Mr. McElstrom, what is your opinion of our chances with community radio being legalized?
What are your chances at this stage? I really do not know. But I would think that our minister will be under a lot of pressure from many of our TDs, because I'm sure that you will have many other pirate stations from all over the whole country approaching their local representatives to have a chat with the minister, rechanging his mind about banning pirate radio stations. This matter will come up for general discussion at our parliamentary party meeting, which we have every Wednesday when the Dáil sits. That's every week, of course. And I'm sure we will have a very healthy discussion on the matter, and we will hear the different views of all the TDs from the different constituencies. And I would like to assure you that I will be foremost anyway in on behalf of Tralee radio station to ensure that that will be allowed on the air, because I feel that you are doing a very good job of work, and it's a very good program. Certainly. First of all, I hope you understand about any new legislation that's introduced in the Dáil. It's usually discussed at a parliamentary party meeting, and we have to abide by the democratic decision, and it's discussed there. And if a majority vote in favour of banning pirate stations, well, we have to abide by the majority rule. But I certainly will be making a case for Tralee and for the other pirate stations in the country to allow them to stand and allow them go on the air. I think they're doing a very good job, and I don't think there's anything harmful in them.
Mr. Tommy McElaystrom, North Kerry Fianna Fáil TD. Mr. Tim O'Connor, a TD for South Kerry, had this to say.
First of all, Mr. O'Connor, I'd like to welcome you to this interview on behalf of the Tralee Community Station, and I wish you every success tonight at the UC Convention. First of all, I'd like to ask you, what do you think of the community stations?
Well, I think they serve a very useful purpose, particularly in rural areas. And as I say, we have to have local media, if you like, and this is, I've always thought that they were entitled to the license, whatever it is, that would allow them to operate. Now that I've been told there's nothing nearer than Limerick, certainly we're entitled to something here in Kerry. And if Radio Éireann has 14, did you say?
That's right, yes.
Well, I think one of those, anyway, one should be allocated down here.
As you're probably aware, all we're asking for is the opportunity to provide the Kerry people with a community radio service. And it's not really fair to be excluded from this new legislation. Would you be willing to back us and give us the support we need?
I will do. And especially if I get to Europe. If they're dictating from there.
And we'll support you.
Because that's why I'm going up in Kerry, is to get the things in Kerry that we aren't getting.
And community radio would be a great advantage to the political parties as well.
Oh, I think so. Well, anyway, it should keep the people informed of what's going on. And I think that's very necessary today.
Yes, that's
you've seen it, yeah.
So we can expect a commitment from you on behalf of the radio.
Yes, yes.
I'd like to thank you very
I'd
much.
I'd be fighting for you. You'll see along, so to have this available, as I say, service in Kerry.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. O'Connor.
The political situation then is much the same as it was in 1978, although the local borough elections and the European elections would probably defer any action or legislation until later in 79. Local radio has become a political issue in Ireland with the nationwide growth, and because of that it'll be extremely difficult for the general public to allow the general idea of local radio to be just taken away from them. Thank you. Recent events within the stations have also resulted in a general shift of priority. Big D Radio suffered a severe and tragic blow when the co-owner Noel Kirwan was killed in a car crash in December 78. A month later, the studios were destroyed in a fire, the cause of which has yet to be clarified. Meanwhile, AOD Radio also undergoing traumatic internal and financial difficulties, with one of the key figures of AOD, Don Moore, departing to start a station in Mullingar. Midland Radio, which has since materialized. Within Capital Radio itself, all was not going quite so smoothly. Having seen the first raid in 1979 on the 7th of January, post office. While this program was being made, results came in of TAM ratings for the new RTE television channel, RTE2. They show that advertisers were backing away from the station because it simply wasn't grasping the audience. Not a very good recommendation for RTE Radio 2, which has been shelved until October 79, a deferment of over 1 year since it was originally scheduled to begin. RTE's plans for local radio services at Limerick, Cork, Athlone, New Ross and Dublin have yet to materialise also. Obviously, the pirates are proving to be little more than a problem than it was at first acknowledged.
The future sound, now. This is Capital Radio, Dublin City. Where the music is better.